This is an In It For The Kicks exclusive.
All throughout September, we have renamed that month to Two Step Timber. UK Garage and Two Step absolutely swept the world in the 90s. And for the past 2 weeks, we've been representing the genre. This week, however, both Greg and I were sitting here going, well, we're not experts in this. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to bring in a trained specialist. He is the man of Two Step, UK Garage, back in the day and right now. His name is Jason Howson, and he is right here in the studio tonight. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, very good, gents. Thanks for having me.
Hey, not a problem, man. When did you first kind of discover UK Garage and Two Step?
I was working in a record store called True Tone in St. Luke's at the time. And a friend, a mutual friend introduced me to a guy called Campbell. He was very much into a bunch of kind of funk and soul, and that's what he was down with. And then we'd had chats about house music and bassier stuff and earlier drum and bass, etc. And I was probably saying I'm looking for a sound, and he said, look, I've got a mate that's given me some tapes, and these tapes came from recordings from what was the Chelsea Football Rooms in London, and they were hosted by the likes of Ramsey and Fenn, DJ EZ, Charlie Brown was MCing, Tuff and Jam were on it, and a bunch of other people. But you got the idea, so he gave me these tapes, and these tapes had what was basically the early kind of Speed Garage, UK Garage sound happening. They were pitching up things, but there was a bunch of new sort of UK tunes on these tapes, and it had guys MCing over what was effectively bassy house music. So I fell in love, and I was, what is this? And from there, these cassettes kind of became the thing that I would try and work out what every tune was from what the MC was saying. And you kind of put it together. And at that point, I was hearing very early MJ Cole, because he was doing the beats for Ramsey and Fenn, and all this, so all it kind of came together for me, and that was my very first taste. From there, I booked a ticket to the UK.
Excellent. What happened when you reached the UK? And kind of what sort of maybe year was this? Maybe
this was 1998 when I went to the UK.
When was kind of maybe the first year that you started listening to these people that we now kind of respect as the sort of pioneers of that
97
sound?
So yeah, so somewhere in 97, that's where I picked up these tapes.
And you went to the UK?
Uh-huh. I went to the UK, and I had a plan at that point. I'd worked out enough. I'd read my ID magazines and my Face magazines. There'd been articles, and I went with a very good... Well, I didn't. I went by myself, but met up with a very good friend, Mark Burgess. And he had some friends up in North London that were doing pirate radio. And so he introduced me to them, and they happened to be a guy called Mystic Matt. He was running the station, which was a sewing shop through the day. And he had a crew called the Bubbling Crew. Some of his tunes that I could not work out were on these tapes. So that, for me, when that happened, I was like, so you're Mystic Matt. This is this big, huge tune that I know, this underground tune. And yeah, that happened. And he put me on the pirate. So that's when I started to... I was DJing on a pirate station called Time FM.
How big was the scene back then?
The scene was big. It was the London sound. It had kind of... all of the bigger club nights were at a place called the Coliseum. In fact, there were several clubs that were doing it. Drum and bass had kind of gone back to the Blue Note. It was quite small. I mean, there's a big rave culture. And so they had huge parties like Sidewinder or Twice as Nice, where you get several thousand people turning up. And that was happening weekly. And then you had another very famous place called the Stratford Rex, that was in a sort of rougher part of town. And that was another place that was happening. So it was a big scene. It was a really exciting scene. And all the record shops were really, really on it. So it was kind of about finding your man and hearing the tunes on all dub plates.
And was this just like a real London thing? Did you like head out of London to Birmingham to Bristol? What was sort of happening out there at the time?
I never went to Bristol on my trip.
Yeah.
I was in London for just over a month, and I flatted in Balham. I went down to Brighton. There was only a little scene there. There was a record shop there. I didn't see any nights. So it was very much London focused, and for me it was London focused. I remember I was going out probably up to five times a week, plus radio. And I'd taken a vacation from my job, but it kind of, my boss said, go for it, Jay, I'll see you in 8 weeks. I think I went to New York afterwards and saw Rob. So I made it. That's what I did. I just kind of went. I didn't crazy party. I just went out and just discovered music all the time. I'll go out Thursday night, a couple of clubs on Friday and Saturday and do the pirate. Yeah, so it was, go on.
So we have asked you rather nicely if you could represent maybe two just tunes that sum up two-step for you that you absolutely love. Don't give away the second one just yet, but what's maybe one tune for you that just, people need to go out and check out, and maybe, a track that you've had a real great experience with?
Okay, this first one is one that may have slipped through the cracks for a number of people. It's by, the artist is Dolally, which was effectively Shanks and Bigfoot, which you'd know as Chocolate Boy, probably their big kind of pop hit. So they did a tune called Straight From The Heart, which was a dub plate for the entire time I was in London at that period, and was eventually released and bought by Locked On. That came out as the dub plates would about 6 to 8 months later, in probably 1999. But this tune, Dolally, Straight From The Heart, was a massive, massive tune, and only a very select few DJs had the tune when I was there. So when this was dropped in clubs, this was huge. And on Pirate, it was literally the top five tunes of summer in London at that time. So Dolally, Straight From The Heart.
Jason, what happened when you brought that sound back to New Zealand?
Okay, so when I came back, I came back, full of energy, and I came back like a pack mule. I had to bring all the physical units back. You couldn't, there was no MP3s. There was nothing like that. So I bought that all back and landed and started to play it to friends. And everyone got really excited, and we swiftly put together ideas for club nights. We wanted to do radio, so we kind of had all these ideas, and again Mark Burgess came in and helped me put together my first club night that would have been at Herzog.
What, can you remember what it was called?
I think it was Sound of the Underground or something. Hey, having said that, it was when Silk Cuts was born too, because when I was in the UK, I had got as far as thinking, well, I need a crew, or I need a club night or something. So Silk Cuts was born in a backyard of Balham with me with a notebook, kind of taking, there was a night called Pure Silk. So I took the Silk part from that and then came up with the Cuts bit and voila, that was it.
And Silk, sorry to cut you off there. Silk Cuts has been like that's what most people have probably experienced in New Zealand, that particular brand, that sound. Mr. Jason Howson, bought here and is very much, played a major part in two-step. So what happened with Silk Cuts?
Yeah, very much so. And luckily enough, around that time, I'd gone back to my record store, and a gentleman wandered in. His name was Sean Lyons, and he had heard through a friend that I was selling vinyl and selling house and stuff like that, and I had this one conversation with him. And we got on like a house on fire, had very similar tastes in music, and I invited him back to my house for a beer and a mix. And from there, that's where Silk Cuts was born. He's been my partner in crime ever since, and is to this day. So that was a super important part, even for Two Step and UK Garage in this country, because he is the other guy, effectively. He's, yeah.
And probably out there, I almost guarantee there's going to be a whole flock of people that have been to your nights. Where were some of the nights that you had, and what were some of the parties? It was
Hooky was definitely one of my favourite parties, and we ran that at the old St. James upstairs.
In the Grand Circle.
In the Grand Circle.
Yeah.
And we were running nights at Cool Celeb, which is the old box. And then we went on to run nights at the old Foo Bar, which was in Queen Street. And that was probably, that period was probably the best run for Two Step and UK Garage. So those were the three main homes.
In 1989, I had a very, very similar journey to you. I packed up everything I had and I went to the UK. It was kind of like my idea of an OE was to go to the home of where house music was happening and just experience it with no job and just go out, party, soak it up, listen to the radio, buy music in such an abundance. I just had to ship it all back. But I often think, I always wonder whether I made a mistake ever returning to New Zealand. I want to ask you that same question. What could have happened if Jason Howson had stayed in the UK or in London? Do you ponder that question, Jason?
I don't ponder it. I am now. At points in my life, I may have pondered it, but when I returned, well, one of the best things was I left the UK and went to New York. So there was I kind of went on to another exciting adventure, a shorter adventure, but still had things to conquer in New York that I wanted to do. So I was kind of swept up in this. It was the same journey, like you did. But this was New York time. So, and by the time I got back home, I was super excited about bringing something back to New Zealand. And I do love my home. I do ponder, but I'm really pleased I made the decision to come back, because I met some of my very best friends around that time, and went through this musical enlightenment, I suppose.
I asked this question because you seem to have got a lot deeper into the scene in London than I. Only scratched the surface, but you got pretty close to the epicenter of a scene that is constantly changing, that is constantly offering immense inspiration. And sometimes we come back here and there's a lot of frustration.
There was definitely frustration. But again, at the same time, I kind of came back with the mission to I can figure this out. I can try and get this music back here. I kind of had the opportunity with True Tone, so I was lucky to be able to do that. I got very close to the epicenter, and in some respects, some parts of it seems not ludicrous, but things like the pirate radio situation, it was an illegal thing to do, so there was always the opportunity for it to suddenly stop. And I did many, many club nights. So I kind of almost got into that kind of I'm a Londoner kind of feeling. And so at the time, I do remember thinking, okay, I'm ready to move on.
Okay, well, on behalf of Auckland, I want to thank you for coming back home.
Who knows? We might not have had Two Step or UK Garage in this country without you.
Jason definitely offered something extremely unique. And for all the listeners out there, this is a man who has taken risks beyond 99.9% of the DJs I've ever witnessed and been happy to listen to over the years.
We're going to go play your another favourite of yours there. What can you tell us about this particular one?
So this one was a man if one should be fairly familiar with, Craig David.
Oh,
and
yeah.
another group that you should be fairly familiar with, which is Artful Dodger. Yeah.
Which most people know from Rewind.
Exactly.
When the crowd says Bo Selector.
And that was the one if one was thinking I'd probably choose. But I chose a tune called What You're Gonna Do, which is probably the little known... Well, this is the first time they got together, and this was another very big dub play. And this, I chose this tune for reasons that sonically, it was so far out and so much better than anything that was really happening at that time in 1998. The drums were really crisp, but the production was just another level. And no one knew who Craig David was, so it was a faceless kind of vocal. And it was exciting, and it was another very, very big tune, for the reason when you listen to it, when it has the drop the funk, drop the bass, that would just erupt clubs. That is a memory for me, when 1,500 people at the Coliseum in London would just go crazy when the DJ just cut that record in. So that's the reason I chose this song.
You've mentioned a couple of times just leading into this, the word dubplate. Now, I'm sure the three of us in this room right now know exactly what you're talking about. For other people, what is a dubplate?
Dubplate was something that the DJs would have probably at the time, you can correct me, Greg, but a DAT or some style of master that they would take to a pressing plant, and the person that would cut the plate would cut it especially for them. And they were acetates, or they were not final versions, and they wouldn't last as long. They were kind of a big, dumb, ugly piece of vinyl in a way, but they were super rare, and they would cost up to anywhere between sort of, let's say, 50 quid to cut. So the DJ would make a special effort. He would choose the track and say, this tune is going to define me this weekend or for the next 6 months. And the better you got at that, the bigger the DJ you became. So the dubplate was pretty special,
We are in the midst of Two Step Timber. We have the man, Jason House, and he's been giving us the story of UK Garage and Two Step. We have reached up to his time, bringing it back from the UK, doing his thing in New Zealand. But like all good things, it's kind of got to evolve and it's got to keep on kind of going. So what kind of year did the sort of UK two-step and the kind of garage thing sort of lose its favour?
I have the feeling it was around 2003, 2004. And at that point, a lot of the productions had become samey, I guess. And there'd been a commercial value placed on the sound, and things started to become a bit scattered.
In the UK, they were having numerous number one hits. Like you mentioned before, Shanks and Bigfoot.
Daniel Bedingfield.
Yeah, your So Solid crew.
So Solid, well, that's when So Solid kind of took the trophy. That around that time, that's when this kind of stuttered raps had started. So the beginning of grime, the music was getting a bit darker because they wanted to take it off radio effectively in a way. They wanted a definition. Still, the pirate scene was really, really happening. Rinse FM had begun, and they wanted a definition. So there was a couple of specialist shows, but the sound itself had become very kind of diffracted, if that's the word, and morphed because of it. So people were starting to come with their own ideas. And you could say the whole of the UK at this point were doing what they thought was garage, or what they didn't even want to be garage anymore. But the tempo had kind of... They were happy with the tempo, but they weren't happy with that one girly garage, champagne bubbly sound. And so things were changing there.
And what did it morph into?
So the sound itself had become diffracted, and what probably the energy that you could really hear bubbling to the surface was the grime sound. The stuff that's now bubbled to the surface again almost a decade later, which is amazing. But the very same people were starting to do their thing. Newham Generals, Skepta, Wiley, Dizzy, of course, had become the young star. And having said that, there was a guy called Youngstar doing this amazing just beat records, and a lot of my friends from the dubstep scene that were growing up with this stuff tell me about that. That was kind of a time where they had just got into it, and that's where grime was appealing and this darker bassy sound was coming through.
And for you especially, you championed the underground dubstep sort of scene in New Zealand as well, so you'd already done it with Two Step earlier on, and you you got to do it with the dubstep sound as well. So when was that kind of kicking off, and where were for you were the sort of the best parts of that particular sound as well?
that started to kick off around the 2004-2005 period. I was very, very lucky to be working with Jeff Wright at Subtronics at that point.
DJ Pressure.
So he had his distribution arm, and we would come together once a week and bring records down to Greg's shop and what have you. And at that point, I was starting to get, because I wasn't a drum and bass DJ, wicked, meant I was getting all of these tunes that Jeff had no use for. And so Pressure was giving me all these amazing records.
So you got those and I got the house records.
You got the house records. So we're all super happy.
So this was down at BPM Records?
This was down at, yes.
Greg
was at BPM.
Yep.
And Nick Dwyer was at BPM. And Philippa. And it was an amazing crew. So, I got Scream's Midnight Request Line on White Label around that time. And I remember taking that record home. And I was living with another person at the time, and we had turntables set up, and I took it home and played that record probably 3 or 4 times in the course of an hour, just standing there going, what is this? Because it wasn't grime, and it wasn't garage anymore, and it was dubstep. So that was when the defining moment. That's when I started to look for dubstep records.
And that sort of followed a very kind of similar thing as the two-step, that, you know, as it became more and more popular, you know, what was the word you used? Defracted?
It has a life cycle, I suppose. That's what it happens with all of these sounds. And the exciting thing is, there's always the outlying tunes that just pop up.
But it's ultimately a London thing, isn't it?
It's very, very much a London thing. And that was part of the frustration. One of the reasons I wanted to come back, I think, with two-step and garage, because you couldn't see the stuff happening on the internet at the time, as where dubstep was more transparent. You could see it happening because we had the internet. So that's why I thought it was kind of important that I would bring this music to New Zealand and say, look, so I thought there'd be an audience for it. And dubstep was another beast entirely, because it crept up on us to the point where our first Casper gig at Foo Zen that we sold out, we had no idea even at that point that dubstep had gone so massive. And that was all because of the channels we're now used to, the YouTubes and things like that. All of these kids came into the club, and all our core audience said, who are these kids? And we just suddenly realised dubstep had just gone crazy.
What year was that? That was the late kind of 2000s.
That was really 2009, I think, that Casper
sure
gig.
That.
Yeah, but that was a... We needed a bigger venue. we just didn't know what to do.
And bringing it around to 2015, and what's been, you know, just sort of amazing to watch, and we're still right in this right now, is all of those sounds, all of those noises that were in the two-step sound have all kind of come back. So where does that sort of leave you at the moment?
That leaves me really excited. I think I was just saying to Greg and yourself that there's just a momentum for what I'm playing again, because there's that cool old sound being done by brand new people and putting brand new elements into it, and another whole decade of music where you can just grab all these other amazing things. So yeah, it's a very exciting time for music generally, I think, and there's a lot of the rules have been thrown out, and there's not that kind of I'm into this anymore. There's a lot of people playing across genres and playing sort of really varied BPM sets, so it's really exciting. I mean, my average set, if I plan it properly now over 2 hours, will start at 123 BPM, work through to 140 through that period, because you can just play all this stuff together now that all makes sense. As where a decade ago, you wouldn't have had the stuff at 135, 140.
This is what I'm enjoying about house music and techno, is the integration of a sense of history with it all as well, and it all makes perfect sense. And I can see this is what you're saying.
That's absolutely all of this bass music, and now it's called bass music because people have just they're done with the genre almost. It's just all making sense together. It's exciting.
And for people that have heard this and are like, wow, that sounds really intriguing, who would be some of the artists that they should go and YouTube and look up that are producing stuff that you really like, kind of at the moment or the last couple of months?
Last couple of months at the moment are Butters as a recording label. Really have a lot of very big people on their roster. So guys like Royal T, Flavor D, one of the female artists. Amongst that is another guy I love called Mooney. And Mooney's doing, he'll pull the classic garage kind of record together and make it sound brand new. And because all of this, the technology now, stuff is a lot louder and it's a lot fatter, and he's probably doing things with records that MJ Cole wanted to do. That's my feeling. And you kind of go, oh, that sounds like an MJ Cole record, and you go back to it and it's just half as loud and it's not, and Mooney's just doing this booming kind of sound. So he's one of the big guys. There's a number. I mean, Smokin' Bubbly B, and he's a guy that he's 17 years old, and he's doing a classic 98 4/4 garage sound, like back at the Chelsea football rooms.
And he probably wouldn't have even been alive.
No, not at all. Not at all. And that's the thing. And it's amazing. But it is a classic. It's almost like he's found one of these cassettes that I got given. And I just don't get it. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
All I want to say is, Jason, thank you so much. This has been outstanding.
There you have it, Jason Howson. Thank you very much for popping in. Hopefully you guys have a lot more of the story of UK Garage and Two Step for Jason Howson, and also for Little Old NZ as well. Once again, thank you very much. Very educational. Enjoyed that.
Thank you very much, guys. I'm so honoured to be here, honestly. I was super stoked. So thank you, guys.
Thank you for coming.
The first ever electronic music show on Howrekkie. This is In It For The Kicks. 10 till midnight Friday nights. Radio Howrekkie.